Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Glad to be here for another deep dive.
Yeah, so I want you to imagine for a second that you're sitting in a clinical geneticist's office. You know, you've just taken a genetic test to see if you have an inherited susceptibility to breast cancer.
Right, specifically looking at the BRCA1 gene, usually.
Exactly. And you are sitting there expecting a very clear answer, like a binary, yes, you carry a risky mutation, or no, your sequence looks standard. But instead of that, your doctor looks at the paperwork and just hands you a giant agonizing question mark.
Yeah, it is a scenario that plays out in clinics around the world every single day.
Which is terrifying for the patient.
Completely. Yeah. It represents this profound state of clinical limbo.
Right, and they call it a variant of uncertain significance, or a VUS. Basically, you have a mutation, so like a slight change in your DNA sequence, but the current state of science literally cannot tell you if that change is going to cause cancer or if it's completely innocent.
It's just a blank space in our medical knowledge.
Right. And to understand why this happens, I always think it's helpful to think of your DNA like a massive generational cookbook. And a missense variant, which is what we're talking about today, is simply a single typo in one of those recipes.
I love that analogy, yeah.
So if the recipe says bake for 30 minutes and the typo swaps the B for an M, so it says make for 30 minutes.
The cake might taste a little different, maybe the texture's off, but it still functions as a cake.
Exactly, that's a harmless variant. But what if the typo changes the 3 to a 9, so now it says bake for 90 minutes?
Oh, then the entire 3D structure just collapses in the oven, it's ruined.
Right, it's completely destroyed. So how do doctors know which typo is the harmless make for 30 minutes and which one is the dangerous bake for 90 minutes?
Well, that is the central challenge for the medical community right now. Knowing exactly which microscopic molecular typo causes the biological cake to collapse.
And today we're diving into a massive stack of recent clinical genomics research to figure out how artificial intelligence and three-dimensional protein modeling are teaming up to finally eliminate this clinical limbo.
It's honestly a fundamental shift. We're moving away from just reading the one-dimensional text of our DNA and starting to predict the actual 3D physical structure of the machines that the DNA built.
Right, which brings us to the team behind this. Today we celebrate the work of Lubna Ramadan Moshadi, Miguel de la Hoya, and a really massive international collaborative team.
Yeah, spanning multiple continents, actually.
Yeah, institutions like the Hospital Clínico San Carlos in Spain, the University of Queensland, TUIMR Burkhofer in Australia, and Ambry Genetics in the US. They've all advanced our understanding of classifying BRCA1 genetic variants.
And our discussion today is grounded entirely in their really incredible paper, which was published in the American Journal of Human Genetics on May 1st, 2025.
It's just so cool to see research that combines the expertise of, you know, molecular oncologists, biostatisticians, and clinical geneticists all working to solve this global bottleneck.
It really takes a village to tackle a problem this complex.
Definitely. But before we get into their new AI solution, I think we need to understand how doctors are actually making these calls today. Like, what does the manual process look like when a clinician is trying to decide if a mutation is dangerous?
Okay, so the current gold standard for classifying these genetic variants relies on a framework created by the American College of Medical Genetics and Genomics.
Okay.
Along with the Association for Molecular Pathology. In the clinic, they just call it the ACM-JNP framework.
Or ACM-JNP, got it.
You can think of it almost like a courtroom trial for a specific genetic mutation. The clinician acts as the judge, and they're gathering different lines of evidence to build a case.
So they're looking for points to tip the scales one way or the other.
Exactly. They assign specific codes to the variant based on the evidence they find. So for example, if computational tools predict that a mutation is dangerous,
like the prosecution's evidence.
Right, the prosecution. They apply a code called PP3, which stands for pathogenic computational evidence. On the flip side, if the tools predict the mutation is harmless,
the defense.
Yes, the defense's evidence. Then they apply a code called BP4, which indicates benign computational evidence.
And whichever side of the scale has the most evidence dictates what the doctor actually tells the patient sitting in front of them.
That's the goal, yeah. Now, for the BRCA1 gene specifically, the expert panel in charge of these guidelines currently relies heavily on a computational tool called Bayesdell.
Bayesdell.
Yeah, they use it to assign those PP3 and PP4 codes. And Bayesdell is used to look at mutations in two highly critical load-bearing areas of the BRCA1 protein, specifically the BRing and BRCT domains. But the thing is, Bayesdell primarily makes his predictions based on evolutionary conservation.
Wait, evolutionary conservation? Meaning like it looks at the sequence of DNA across different animals to see if it has changed over time.
Yes, exactly. It asks a really simple but powerful question. If we look at a human, a mouse, a dog, and a fruit fly,
okay,
has this specific string of genetic code stayed exactly the same across millions of years of evolution?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And if it hasn't changed at all across all those species, nature's basically screaming at us that this specific sequence is absolutely critical for survival.
So any mutation there is likely catastrophic.
Precisely.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second, because evolutionary conservation makes perfect sense logically. But earlier, we talked about how proteins are physical 3D machines doing heavy lifting inside our cells.
Mm-hmm.
If the protein's physical shape is what actually matters, why are our gold standard clinical guidelines basically treating these proteins like a flat 1D string of text? Like, why has the actual 3D structure been sidelined in this whole courtroom trial?
To be honest, it really just comes down to technological limitations. Historically, we simply didn't include 3D structure in these clinical frameworks because we didn't have high-quality, experimentally determined 3D structures for every protein.
Because getting their structures is hard, right?
Incredibly hard. Figuring out a protein shape in a laboratory requires a process called X-ray crystallography. It is painstakingly slow, it's incredibly expensive, and, well, some proteins just outright refuse to crystallize at all.
They just won't cooperate.
Right. So the clinical frameworks had to rely on what was abundant and cheap, which was 1D sequence data.
But relying only on the sequence means we miss the physical mechanics of why the mutation is breaking the protein. I mean, it's like trying to figure out why a car engine won't start just by reading the parts list without ever opening the hood to see how the parts actually connect.
That is the perfect analogy. And the researchers behind this study recognize that relying solely on evolutionary sequence data leaves massive, massive gaps in our understanding. So they set out to prove that structural data, the actual physics of the protein, needs to be formally written into the clinical rulebook.
Okay, so they have this theory that 3D structure will give better answers. But to prove that, they need an answer key, right? They need a massive set of mutations where we already know with absolute certainty whether they cause cancer or not, so they can test their new structural models against it.
Yes, and they utilized an incredible data set known as MAVE, which stands for Multiplexed Assays of Variant Effect. It is honestly a monumental scientific achievement.
But what exactly is in it?
The research team took 1,638 specific missense variants in the BRCA1 gene that had already been physically tested in a wet lab.
Wait, really? Someone physically tested over 1,600 variants?
Yes. Scientists had manually observed whether each of those mutated proteins functioned correctly or if they failed and lost their function. This MAVE dataset served as their absolute ground truth, their answer key.
Okay, so they have this answer key of 1,638 known mutations. The next logical step is to throw our newest computational models at those variants to see if the computers can grade the test correctly.
Exactly.
So what kind of tools did they use to assess the 3D structure?
They utilized three distinct structural approaches. First, they used Alpha Missense.
I've heard of that. That's the Google DeepMind AI, right?
Yes, a highly advanced AI system built upon the architecture of AlphaFold. Alpha Missense is trained to predict how likely a mutation is to cause disease by looking at both evolutionary patterns and the structural context of the protein.
Okay, that's tool number one. And the second approach?
The second approach focused purely on thermodynamics. Okay. They used a tool called FoldX, specifically FoldX 5.0, to calculate the folding stability of the protein.
So thermodynamics, so like heat and energy.
Basically, they measured the physical strain on the molecule to see if a mutation would require too much energy for the protein to hold its proper shape. And they ran these thermodynamic calculations on both real laboratory structures and AI-generated models from AlphaFold 2.
Okay, wait. Before we get to the third tool, I want to clarify something about these first two.
Sure.
If we are using AlphaMissense, which is an AI, and we are also using AlphaFold AI models to run the thermodynamic stability calculations, aren't we essentially just testing AI against AI here? Like, how do we know one isn't just copying the other?
That is a very valid question, and it's a crucial distinction to make. We are actually using two fundamentally different types of engines here. AlphaMissense is a deep learning neural network. It has ingested millions of protein sequences and structures, and it recognizes incredibly complex invisible patterns to output a likelihood score.
Right.
But it doesn't actually know physics.
It's pattern recognition on a massive scale.
Correct. FoldX, on the other hand, is a strict physics engine. It knows nothing about evolution or cancer or deep learning patterns. It literally just runs mathematical equations for thermodynamic physical strain. It's calculating the atomic forces pushing and pulling on the molecule.
Oh, I see.
So the fact that FoldX is running its physics math on a 3D blueprint generated by AlphaFold doesn't make FoldX an AI tool. One predicts patterns while the other calculates raw physical stress. They are asking entirely different questions of the mutation.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, so we have pattern recognition and we have physics calculations. What was the third tool?
The third approach was a metric called RSA, or relative solvent accessibility. This calculates the physical geography of the mutation.
Geography, like where it lives on the protein.
Exactly. Yeah. Is the specific mutated amino acid buried deep inside the protective core of the protein, or is it exposed on the outside surface, interacting with the watery environment of the cell?
Okay, this sounds a bit like a filled pastry to me.
A pastry?
Yeah, like the buried amino acids are the jam filling, locked safely inside the dough, and the exposed amino acids are the crust on the outside, interacting with everything else in the bakery box.
That is actually a very apt way to visualize it, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the researchers took these three concepts, AlphaMissense patterns, thermodynamic physical strain, and the crust versus filling location, and ran them against the MVE answer key.
The ultimate question being, did this new 3D structural approach actually perform better than the old sequence-based tool, Bayesdell, that clinicians are currently using?
The results were definitive. The structural approach significantly outperformed the sequence-only tool.
Really? By how much?
Well, AlphaMissense proved incredibly adept at discriminating between harmless and broken variants. It achieved an area under the curve, an ROC score of 0.93.
Wow, that's really high.
It is. But the most impactful metric for the patient sitting in the clinical geneticist's office is how these tools affect that agonizing limbo state, the VUS category.
Right. How many patients were they able to actually move out of the limbo category?
When the researchers optimized the scoring thresholds using their new structural guidelines, only 5% of the variants fell into the uninformative, uncertain score range.
Only 5%?
Yeah. Compare that to the current standard with Bayesdell, where 14% of the variants were stuck in limbo.
Wait, that is a massive reduction in uncertainty. That is essentially 9% more patients getting a definitive yes or no instead of a giant question mark.
It's a huge step forward for clinical clarity.
But I mean, science is rarely a perfect sweep, right? Did the models fail anywhere? Because earlier you mentioned the pastry analogy, the crust versus the filling, and I suspect the location of the mutation threw a wrench into the system somewhere.
You're spot on. It did. And it actually led to one of the absolute most critical bombshell revelations in the entire paper.
Oh, wow. What happened?
The researchers discovered that these computational tools, even the highly advanced AlphaMissense and the standard Bayesdell, completely failed to provide reliable benign evidence for mutations that sit on the surface of the protein, the crest in your analogy.
Wait. So a protein can be evaluated by our most powerful AI. The AI can confidently say, hey, this mutation is completely harmless, the patient is fine. But if that mutation is on the outside crust of the protein, we actually cannot trust the computer's answer.
We cannot trust it for benign calls, no. And we have to look at the biological mechanics to understand why.
Okay, let's unpack that. Why does it fail?
Because these algorithms and physics engines are incredibly good at detecting if a mutation will destabilize the protein's fold, like if it will melt the core of the molecule.
If the jam filling leaks out.
Right. But a mutation on the surface of the protein rarely ruins the core fold. The protein usually remains perfectly stable.
So the computer sees a stable, well-folded protein and just assumes it's functional. But stable doesn't necessarily mean it's doing its job.
Precisely. Proteins do not operate in a vacuum. BRCA1 is a tumor suppressor protein. To repair damaged DNA and prevent cancer, it has to physically bind with other helper proteins. It has to perform a structural handshake.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Yeah, a mutation on the surface might leave the BRCA1 protein completely stable, but it alters the surface chemistry just enough to ruin that critical handshake with its partner.
So if it can't make the handshake, the DNA goes unrepaired, and the patient is at a high risk for cancer. And the computer completely missed it because it was only checking to see if the protein was structurally intact.
Exactly. This is why human oversight and understanding the limitations of our tools is paramount. We absolutely must know the physical location of a mutation, the RSA, before we blindly accept a benign score from an algorithm.
That is wild. That completely changes how we should interpret AI predictions in medicine. It's not just about the score, it's about knowing what the AI is actually capable of seeing.
It's all about context.
Now, everything we've talked about so far is based on laboratory tests and computer simulations. Did the researchers validate these findings in the real world? Like, does this hold up when we look at actual human patients?
They did, which is what elevates this paper from a theoretical exercise to a clinically vital study. They cross-referenced their structural findings against the Bridges dataset.
What's the Bridges dataset?
It's a massive registry containing genetic data from over 50,000 population-based breast cancer cases.
Oh, wow. So they checked to see if the mutations the computer flagged as physically unstable actually translated to real women getting cancer.
Yes. And they proved that the specific variants flagged as dangerous by these structural physics tools correspond directly to clinically actionable breast cancer risk levels.
Incredible.
The data showed odds ratios over 4. That means patients carrying these specific, structurally unstable variants are more than 4 times as likely to develop breast cancer in their lifetime. It confirms that the physical strain calculated by the computer mirrors the biological reality in the human body.
That is such powerful validation. Now, I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier regarding the methodology, because this part fascinated me.
Sure, what's that?
When they were running the thermodynamic physical strain calculations, you said they didn't just use X-ray crystallography structures from the lab, they also used structures generated by AlphaFold.
Yes, the AI models.
How did the AI models perform compared to the painstakingly slow laboratory models?
This represents a major paradigm shift for the field. The researchers found that the thermodynamic calculations ran just as accurately on the AI-generated AlphaFold 2 models as they did on the real experimental crystal structures derived from a laboratory.
You're kidding. It's like finding out that a hyper-realistic video game physics engine is just as reliable for crash testing cars as actually building a real car, putting a dummy inside, and crashing it into a concrete wall in a lab.
That's a great way to put it. The implications for scale are just staggering.
It saves an unbelievable amount of time and resources.
Absolutely. It means that we can theoretically assess the structural stability of missense variants in proteins that we haven't even mapped in a physical laboratory yet. We don't have to wait years for a crystal structure. If AlphaFold can accurately model the protein's 3D architecture, we can immediately begin running physics simulations on it to look for vulnerabilities.
But I'm guessing there's a limitation here, right? Because AI isn't a magic wand that solves biology overnight. Did the AlphaFold models work perfectly out of the box for every single part of the BRCA1 protein?
They did not. In fact, when the researchers tried to run the stability calculations on a very specific section of the BRCA1 protein called the Rheng domain using the basic AlphaFold model, the physics engine returned bad data.
Really? It failed to predict the stability accurately.
It failed completely.
Why did it fail? If the AI is so good at predicting folds, what tripped it up?
Well, it failed because biology is messy, it's crowded, and it's highly collaborative. The basic AI model generated a prediction of the BRCA1 protein sitting completely alone in an empty void.
Just floating by itself.
Right. But in a living cell, the Rheng domain of BRCA1 doesn't work alone. It relies on forming a complex structure, a heterodimer, with another protein called BRD1.
Okay.
Furthermore, the two proteins are physically locked together by 4 zinc molecules.
So the zinc molecules act like biological glue, holding the whole complex together, and the AI didn't know the glue was supposed to be there.
Exactly. The AI lacked the biological context, so the physics engine was trying to calculate the strain on a puzzle that was literally missing half its pieces.
Oh, wow. So how did they fix it?
The researchers had to manually intervene. They built a complex model that included both BRCA1 and DARD1, and they manually inserted the zinc ions into the simulation. And once they provided the proper biological context, the physics engine's predictions matched reality perfectly.
That is such an important lesson. We can't just feed a sequence into an AI and trust the output blindly. We have to understand the microscopic environment the protein actually lives in.
It's a tool, not a replacement for biological understanding.
Right. So, looking at the entire scope of this deep dive, the pattern recognition, the physics engines, the crust versus filling location mapping, how does a clinical geneticist actually implement this tomorrow? Like, when they're staring at a patient's chart, what do they do differently now?
The key takeaway for clinicians is the concept of granularity. Historically, we've relied heavily on single tools that give us broad, sometimes uninformative answers. But this paper demonstrates that clinicians must combine these tools.
So, using them together?
Yes. By using alpha-missense for pattern recognition, running thermodynamic calculations for physical stability, and applying a strict rule about where the mutation lives on the surface, clinicians can assign evidence with much greater precision.
So they aren't just limited to saying, this looks pathogenic or this looks benign. They can confidently declare, we have strong pathogenic evidence, or we have moderate benign evidence, because they have multiple overlapping mechanisms proving the point.
Yes. That granularity is the mechanism that safely pulls those variants out of the VUS limbo. And the clinical recommendation moving forward is that these structural principles shouldn't be limited to just BRCA1. They need to be systematically tested and integrated into the guidelines for other cancer susceptibility genes as well.
To sum up this entire deep dive into the architecture of our biology, how would you capture the core insight of the research team's work?
I'd say the integration of structure-informed AI tools, thermodynamic stability calculations, and a crucial understanding of a variant's physical location on a protein significantly improves our ability to classify missense variants. This multi-layered approach provides unprecedented evidence granularity, safely moving more variants out of clinical limbo and into medically actionable categories.
It really leaves us with a profound thought to chew on. You know, what does it mean for the future of personalized medicine when an artificial intelligence's ability to map the microscopic 3D topology of a single protein becomes the deciding factor in whether a patient chooses to undergo a life-altering preventive surgery? It's just wild to think about.
It truly is a new frontier in genomic medicine.
Well, this episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
On bright screens, a single letter turns the tide. Quiet swapping BRCA1, hard to read inside. We hold the rule book up against the unknown, looking for a sign.